Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, rotten to the core, that they are all counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. We have Kirk with us today. Normally on Fridays, we begin with an examination of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and then turn to the world of Islam with our friend IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ is on vacation this week and next, but since we have Kirk with us, we're going to begin where we normally begin on Fridays, and then we'll transition from that to the news. Now, there's some interesting items. I want to talk more about the capture of Ramada, what that means. There's a new story out on the fact that the Islamic State is now the world's largest non-state, and that we now know what was on Bin Laden's library shelves, and it sheds an interesting light on something that the world just doesn't seem to want to understand. Hello, Kirk. The message that I received indirectly this morning is that if we don't return to the 23rd Psalm with the time that you you spent studying it last night, that we'd have to witness a grown man cry. Right. We wouldn't want to see that, would we?
No, I wouldn't. It's a sad thing. It's embarrassing is what it would be. But in order yeah, to be prepared, you know, you started with the 23rd yesterday. I went down and broke every word down just in case.
Then we are going to rely on what you you have to say. I would like just to briefly recap what we learned yesterday. What we learned yesterday was enough for really for a lifetime, if you're making the right connections. It is a mizmor of Dod. Dod is, by way of introduction, Kirk, he would be, I think he's the most interesting character in the whole of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Well,
most interesting because I think he is the single most profound intellect in all of human history. I think his insights into what matter in terms of who God is, what he is offering, how to observe his testimony, his reflections on that which matters are more profound than anyone in all of human history by a gargantuan margin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think he's the most interesting person in history to study. And he's also a... comfortable. What I say by comfortable is that while he is by many magnitudes smarter than you and I are, he, in terms of his behavior, there is nothing about his behavior that's going to make us feel inadequate.
No.
Dod's just a regular dude, man. When it comes to his behavior, he's just a regular dude. When it comes to his intellect, he is profound. He has figured out that the right thing to focus on is Yahweh's Torah, and he has come to understand it better than anyone in human history, and he has shared the insights with us in the lyrics to songs that he has written. But he was, I think, chosen by Yahweh to be the person who would explain the best way to observe the Torah, because there is no person more appropriate when it comes to undermining religious teaching regarding the Torah.
Yeah.
Now, what does Paul say, and what does Christianity say about the Torah? Is it that you have to keep everything the Torah says, and you have to do it perfectly, otherwise the Torah is going to condemn you? Isn't that the...
One myth and you're out.
Oh, right, one myth and you're out. That's Pauline Christianity. One myth and you're out. That's why there's the gospel of grace brought to you by Paul, and all you have to do is believe, and it doesn't matter that you're a rotten, dirty scoundrel.
Exactly. That's
basically it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's it.
What does the Yahweh say about about Dodd in terms of him being vindicated, upright, righteous?
He said he's perfect.
He said he's perfect, didn't he? Mm-hmm. So Dodd, in Yanoa's eyes, is absolutely perfect. He's been vindicated. He's been found non-guilty. He's been saved, to use the Christian parlance. Did he violate any of the Torah?
There's almost none that I can think of he didn't.
So if you wanted to have the perfect example, if you wanted the perfect example of to prove that it isn't about you, your behavior has nothing to do with your salvation, nothing. And that completely doing everything that the Torah says absolutely perfectly, or that you're going to be condemned by the Torah, that Dodd is the absolute proof that anybody that has an open mind, you just read anything about Dodd, and you'd realize, well, that's poppycock, that Paul obviously lied when he came up with that stupid notion.
Yeah, that's strictly from him. You can't find it anywhere else.
Right. Now, is there anybody that we know of that God loved more than Dodd?
Not really. He never expected.
So we're not here. What we learn is that since Dodd's behavior was pretty sketchy at times, mm-hmm. God's fascination with people is not based upon their behavior, is it?
No, otherwise we might as well give up.
Yeah. It is. It's based upon your attitude and your interests. And the passion that you display regarding certain chosen passions and interests.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that Dodd was maybe the most passionate and interested person in all of human history relative to the Torah?
Well, that's both his advantage and to his disadvantage. He is kind of like shoot first and ask questions later. You know, when he's into it, he's into it, so.
Yeah, and his favorite topic was the Torah. You know, the longest documented guidance, instructions on how to properly observe the Torah is the 119th Psalm.
All right.
It's 176 verses, 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. It's ordered alphabetically to define each of the characteristics of each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, and devoted entirely with 8 statements for each of the 22 letters in alphabetic order, talking about the importance of that letter in its contribution to the Torah on how to observe the Torah.
And 8 always stands for eternity. Which is interesting.
Right.
Verses per letter.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, 8 verses per letter. Yep. And Dodd wrote it. It's one of his mizmors. So the first thing we have to do is when lyrics were written by Dodd, David, which means love, we need to approach them recognizing we're reading the lyrics of not only the most enlightened and intellectual individual who ever lived, but a person who is passionate, who is focused, who possesses uncommon understanding, and who was deliberately and knowingly inspired by Yahweh. Why would you think I would say the last part, that this is beyond just human intellect and understanding? What precedes the 23rd Psalm?
The most accurate account of the crucifixion of Yahusha known.
Yeah.
More accurate in detail than anything that the eyewitnesses accounted for.
By a huge margin, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
By gargantuan margin. Mm-hmm. If you want to read an accurate, complete eyewitness account of what took place on Passover, on yeasted bread, and firstborn children, Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. In year 4000, 33 CE in our pagan calendars, on Mount Moriah, in Jerusalem, Yisrael, what you need to turn to is Psalm 22. Now, Dodd lived about 1,000 years, didn't he, before that occurred?
Way, way, way before. And the scientific end of it is that they discovered on how the body dies in such a torture. Is there as well. I'm not sure. Didn't he also write the 88?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so, I mean, between the two, you've got incredible...
You have a scientific explanation of how crucifixion kills 500 years before crucifixion with ropes was invented by the Assyrians, and 1,000 years before the Romans figured out how to do it with nails.
Yeah.
And it talks about all of the things that transpire in the body when it occurs. So it's for him to have written about crucifixion as the form of the bodily death of the sacrificial lamb 1,000 years before it occurred, in scientific detail and accuracy, the likelihood of him being inspired by Yahweh, I would put at 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's, you can't be an informed, reasonable person to come up with any other criterion. So if Dode says it, it's true because he was inspired by the author of truth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So that's just the beginning of it. It's written by Dode, inspired by Yahweh, absolutely true, intellectually stimulating, and sufficiently profound in its detail and summation, that there is probably no level that you could look, no analysis that you could do that is beyond what was intended.
Mm-hmm.
This is not shallow stuff.
No, not at all.
No. Okay, so he begins. This is the lyrics by Dode. And the first word of the psalm.
I do, Yahweh.
What is it? Yahweh. Now, if you were to pick one word, you only get one word. I'm just going to give you. You've got one word to express what you want, what you know, what you care about,
mm-hmm.
what you think is important. What do you want other people to know? If you only get one word, what would your first word be?
It would still be Yahweh.
Yeah.
I mean, break it down. It means exactly what he's all about. He tells you your whole program in his name. That's why he hates people who hates people
hates.
Who change
right.
their name.
Yeah. When we return, I know we're going over territory that you have that we covered yesterday, and we're going to make progress into new territory. But I think it's always worthwhile to kind of focus on the big picture before you get down into the details. Let's get down into the details of Yahweh's name in a moment, and then we'll consider Shepherd and what his conclusion was once you know Yahweh as your Shepherd. Welcome back to Sharing This. So, Kirk, you had the whole commercial break. Now to think about the four characters that Yahweh chose to write his name. Now, he chose Hebrew as his language of revelation. I'm fairly certain that he chose his own name, how to pronounce his own name. So we would be stupid in the extreme not to consider
mm-hmm.
what those letters in his name represent, since they were all drawn with pictures.
Okay. Yeah, well, absolutely. Despite everyone trying to say they're not so. By the way, I looked up an awful lot of letters last night in regards to historical things, and mm-hmm. I don't know where you can argue that these are not the letters they used. I mean, it just...
No, I don't know either. I realize that there is there's a couple of sites that are promoting various versions of Hebrew that are Christian sites, and they get a lot of stuff wrong. But the names of the letters describe, even today, the images that were drawn to represent them. And if you look at the oldest documents... written in Hebrew. They are written in the same alphabet that we're talking about now.
Mm-hmm. So,
in fact, the oldest alphabet ever found is on a cup that was found in Israel. It was found about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And it's on a cup. And the cup was kind of like a children's cup, like we would give today a child a toy that would have all the letters in it.
Uh-huh.
And so on this cup were the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet you know, all scribed in the clay before it was baked. But it's the 22 letters in alphabetical order written in this alphabet that we're talking about right now. It's the oldest depiction of an alphabet in human history. Now, when you look it up, if you do, to verify what we're talking about, you will read that it was written in a early Phoenician text. Because they want to attribute the Phoenicians, because they don't want to ever give Hebrew credit.
Yeah.
But it's Hebrew.
Yeah, I've read a lot. And that's true. That's when in doubt, make it sure it's a Phoenician that did it. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, by the way, there is no indication the Phoenicians used the Hebrew alphabet. They were precursors to the Greeks, and they were of Greek derivation. So, you know, who knows? But anyway, that's the start. Go ahead.
Anyway, Yahweh, four letters. It starts out with the Yod, and the Yod is a hand reaching down, an arm reaching down and out with an open palm. And what do you do with open palm? We always say is you greet someone, you can hold someone, you can grab someone to hold on to them. Mm-hmm. It's not an offensive weapon. It's an open welcoming thing. So when we talk about Barak, it's the same thing with the hand reaching down to lift us up. So the first one.
And by the way, in Hebrew, when yod is used, hand is used. That's the name of the letter, by the way, and it's also the Hebrew word for hand. When hand is used, you look up hand, yod, in a Hebrew lexicon. After you see hand, are there any other associations with hand that were germane to the mindset of ancient Hebrew?
Absolutely. The power to do work, the... to throw, to toss. Yeah. I mean,
it was the primary thing was the it's what you do. It's about what you do. The hand is about what you do. The eyes are about what you think. And that's the two principal symbols that are used through the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to represent what you think and how you perceive things is always the eye. So, you know, I will say, you know, put my Torah between your eyes. He said, that means let the Torah provide the perspective that enables you to think and therefore understand. And he says, put my Torah on your hand, which means let it guide your choices, what you actually do, how you respond, how you engage.
Yes.
And so hand is how one engages, or the act that they partake in. It's what they do. So Yahweh is about doing, and the hand says that the thing that he is most interested in doing and is reaching down and out. Mm-hmm. But to what or to whom?
Well, obviously to the next one is the hay, which a hay is a individual who's standing up, holding him, reaching up to him, and engaged in walking, and certainly able to walk, not kneeling down. And, of course, we're going to go to commercial. So
So we know who he is reaching out to. We know what he's about to, what he's engaged in doing, and that's reaching out and down with an open hand to lift people up and to walk with them, to engage with them, those who are beholding. Kirk, would we be accurate, you suppose, if you were to look at Yahweh's name as two components rather than four? You know, there are, you mentioned the first letter, which is the hand reaching down to and out to us, defining what Yahweh is about.
Yeah.
And then the second letter being the hey, but there's two of them.
Yeah.
And they're on either side of a wall, which is the tent peg, which talks about securing and enlarging a family home and causing those inside to be increased in every possible way.
Right.
To be added to. If we were to look at Yahweh's name as him reaching down and out to lift up
his family?
His family.
Right.
To secure them, to enrich them, to protect them. All of the things that you would do with in a family home as the head of that family. It's really two people. It's representative. Abraham and Sarah, the mother and father of the covenant from a human perspective.
Mm-hmm. Everything is relational. The whole plan is to build a family between him and us. So absolutely, it's one-two.
Right.
It tells you, you can't miss that if you really think about it very hard.
Yeah. Then the next thing that he does here is he says, Yahweh, and then it is my shepherd, my Ruah.
Mm-hmm.
So he is defining his relationship to Yahweh and to Yahweh's nature, the role that Yahweh is playing in his life.
Mm-hmm.
So he's viewing from the perspective of the Torah. Now, he's the world's foremost scholar on the Torah. After coming to know the author of the Torah, who is Yahweh, he has come to see Yahweh as his shepherd. What did Dode do for a living?
He was a shepherd.
So this is a fellow that really ought to know something about the job of a shepherd, shouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, and he's quite famous for his exploits as a shepherd and protecting his flock.
Right. So here is a shepherd calling Yahweh his shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty profound, isn't it?
I think so. I think that's the right,
So here's a guy that knows to be a shepherd that there are predators out there that would rip your sheep apart if you're not brave and prepared to defend your sheep.
Exactly.
Risk your own life in times to defend your sheep.
Oh, yeah. Well,
a shepherd knows that if he leads his sheep into a dangerous position, that he risks their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Either through starvation, through from lack of water, dehydration, from exposure, or from predators.
Predators, right.
Yeah. So he knew he had that responsibility. Is your job as a shepherd a 5 day a week, 8 hour a day job?
No, it's a 24/7.
24/7 in it. So, for example, as a shepherd on the Shabbat, your job as a shepherd, and on the Shabbat, you've got one of your sheep that has gotten caught in a dangerous position that is life threatening. Are you going to say, hey, you know, it's the Shabbat. I think I'll wait until sundown, and then I'll see if I can help that poor sheep.
No, that would be absurd.
Yeah.
Anyone with common sense.
Right. Right.
And you always said it.
So he knows everything about nurturing and protecting and caring for and leading and guiding sheep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he chose the word for shepherd. Remember I told you yesterday that Ra'ah is one of the most one of the most oft-used Hebrew verbs. And here it was defined as shepherd, but it's the Hebrew verb to see. Now, the difference is, as shepherd, it's written with a rosh, with an ain, and with the hay.
Mm-hmm.
As to see, it is written rosh aleph hay. Pronounced exactly the same way.
Right.
So as to see, it has the most important of the sheep in the midst of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And as the word to shepherd one's flock, it has the Hebrew letter for I in the midst of the word.
Right.
Now you'd think it'd be the other way around, wouldn't you? You know, for the Hebrew word for sea, wouldn't you think you'd have an eye in the middle of it? And for the Hebrew word for a shepherd, wouldn't you have sheep in the middle of it? Because it's a ram's head. It's the head of a male lamb, sheep.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. But now, if the words are related, you would have to look at both of them and say, all right, I see something here. What I see is that what a shepherd does to protect his sheep is that he's always observant.
Mm-hmm.
You're focused on them.
Right.
You're looking at them. You're not only looking at them, you're looking at all of the surroundings. You're studying the surrounding for, is there a threat here? Am I leading them in a path that is easy for them to follow? Am I taking them to a place that is likely to have water and pasture?
Yeah.
Can they follow me?
Right.
Are they following me? Are they all accounted for?
Yeah.
To do that, what is your primary sense that you're using to do all of that?
Well, you have to look around and see where the trouble is.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
You ever ride horses?
Yes.
You take them on high terrains and so forth, and then if you don't watch them, they'll go pretty much where you tell them up to a point. So you've got to look out for their feet. You've got to look out for the path.
Right.
And if you've ever heard cows, which I have.
Right. And they can't turn around. You know, they don't back up well.
No.
Yeah, you can take them in a place where they just can't. They can't turn around like we do.
You have to be three steps ahead.
You betcha. And so when I was talking about it yesterday, I said this word is a blend of observation and shepherding.
Mm-hmm.
It's the observant shepherd. It defines that, you know, you need to observe what the shepherd is doing here. You need to observe the shepherd's guidance. You need to observe the shepherd's nourishment. You need to observe the means that they are providing for protection. That observation is key when it comes to the shepherd. And so, is Dode, by saying he is my shepherd, he's saying Yahweh is the one I'm focused on.
Right, because he's the one that's focused on me.
Yeah, and by focusing on him, he's focused on me. And he says, as a result of that, I will not be. And now, what's interesting here is all of the English language translations say, I won't want.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
Mm-hmm. It's very.
But that's not what the word means.
No.
I shall not be diminished.
Diminished, right. Or decreased or dead.
Yeah. Decreased. I shall not be... inadequate so as to be void, to cease to exist. That's what it means.
Yeah, wanting sounds more like just a, you know, like I'm fed for a day. You know, it's in real time, you know, as opposed to thinking in terms of something far beyond just satisfying you for a while.
Right. So what he's saying here is what's really profound is that if you have Yahweh as your shepherd, if you're observing his guidance, his leadership, if you are observing what he is providing that is nourishing, which is not grass, but his words, his testimony. If you're observing Yahweh and you view him as your shepherd, then you will not be dissipated into nothingness. Your soul will continue to exist.
Right.
Now, Christians would define that as eternal life. Mm-hmm. They would then define that as salvation. But what they don't know is that, according to Yahweh, there are three outcomes for souls, and 99.999% of souls simply cease to exist at the end of their earthly life. They don't know Yahweh. Yahweh does not know them. They didn't pay attention to what he was offering. They did not look at Yahweh as their shepherd, and therefore they are not part of his flock. If you're not part of his flock, you're not part of his covenant, your soul will cease to exist.
Right.
So don't say, that ain't going to happen. And if Yahweh is your shepherd, the one of the three options, which is to be eternally separated from Yahweh, that is never going to happen, because Yahweh is not going to allow one of his sheep to ever be in harm's way or to be separated from him.
Isn't that comforting?
Yeah. So that's the first statement. I don't know if there's a more profound statement that you could make.
No, that should be all you need to go with. I mean, obviously we want more. We want to know everything, but wow, you should sit down and be able to rest on that one.
Okay, speaking of resting.
Yes.
You've looked up the letters that comprise what is translated in pastures of green. And it's interesting here. The word for pastures is a place to inhabit, an abode in which to live, a place that one can settle, that has more than enough nourishment. Where there's so it's a very comforted place. In fact, if you were to look at it in the direct sense, it's a field covered with grass or herbage that is suitable for grazing livestock, which provides an ideal place for the shepherd's flock to live.
Right. Well,
that's the word.
Right.
Nahua. Correct.
Well, you've got you're talking about green or the pastures.
Well, let's deal with the pasture, then we'll deal with green. And pasture is green, a place to be settled, a place to live, a place that is open, a place that you can reside, that has all of the nourishment that one could possibly want. Isn't that what the word means? And it's nawa. It's none, followed by the wa, followed by the hey. Oh, in fact, it's actually got the I'm sorry, I missed the letter. It does have the LF in it. So it's nun LF, wa, hey. So when we return, why don't we consider what that word means, and then we'll consider the... really, the noun that is being used as an adjective to modify this particular pasture. So let's look at the word for pasture. The first thing that I notice here, Kirk, is that other than the first letter, it is it's written identically to the Hebrew word to see. It's a very, very similar word. But in this particular case, let's just analyze the Hebrew word for a grazing place.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a start with a nun, you know, mm-hmm. inheritance, a sperm. So you've got right. Something that's to inherit.
Right. To be born as a child into a family with an inheritance. Okay.
Right.
Child of the covenant.
Then if we have an A, the Aleph, in this case, Aleph, you have an authority. You have protective, with the ram's head once again, and a protective mm-hmm. and authority. Followed by the Wa, which is to increase something, in this case, increase the family home. And then you have the Hay, which is the engaged person who is observant, standing up, beholding greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Further. And that's, so we're obviously the inheritance and the... And the authority increasing the family.
Okay. So this place that Yahweh is taking him, Na'ah, is based upon the word spelled the same way, Na'ah, which means to become beautiful.
Right.
To go to a place that is befitting.
Mm-hmm.
And to become beautiful.
Right.
I suspect there is that was intended in this word.
I think so. I don't think these are coincidences.
Yeah. Okay, and then from there, we have a word being, it's written as a noun, but it's being used as an adjective to modify the nature of this beautiful place. And in this case, It is written as deshe, right?
Oh, okay. Deshe, desha, okay.
Yeah, deshe, desha.
Which is obviously...
Deshe,
mm-hmm.
right.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It,
I don't want to...
Yeah, it means green, right? Green, yeah. It means to grow.
And young green sprouts, right. Food, nourishment, and we, of course, you go to the obvious metaphor of words is... nourishment, nourishing words, that's how we live. That's the pleasant part. Mm-hmm. That's what we live on. You know, obviously we're not sheep. So he's not talking about sheep here. He's talking about us. Yeah, so.
Right. And it's interesting that a related word, the next word in the Hebrew lexicon is dashen, and dashen means to become anointed, to be covered in olive oil, which is the symbol of the set apart spirit. So it means to be. He's saying that I'm going to be made beautiful and befitting by being covered in by the set apart spirit. Mm-hmm. And olive oil was used, deshen, to be anointed in olive oil, because olive oil was the perfect light, source of light in the ancient world.
So we get to be enlightened and anointed as. Like they did when Dode began, he was anointed.
Right. Yeah, now the verbal form of the word dasha is spelled exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's dasha.
Dasha.
And you know what it means? To grow.
Well, yes.
So he's going to become beautiful, and he's going to grow as a result of declaring that Yahweh is his shepherd by being guided by Yahweh.
Okay, you know, you're just telling the whole plan here.
he is. Yeah. Before we describe the letters that are in Dash 8, we have Jason on the line. He has a question in Hebrew, and then we'll get to what the letters convey. Hello, Jason.
Hey, hi there.
Go ahead.
I was just, something jumped out on me the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, as far as the ancient Hebrew goes and what we know about it, I couldn't help but notice that Moshe was named by an Egyptian. I was wondering if you thought about that. The start of
We are told that that he was called to draw out. Because he was drawn out of the reeds, but in this case, the implication is that since he was given a name that is clearly a Hebrew name, it's not a it's not an Egyptian name; it's a Hebrew name. It's based on a Hebrew verb. Moshe is based on the Hebrew verb masa, and it means to draw out. So. It's interesting only in that an Egyptian chose the name, but she chose a Hebrew name.